Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are honored to have Denise Alvarado. She is a root worker and healer, author, who now lives in Arizona, but was raised in the Louisiana Creole culture. And she's written this new book called the Marie Laveau Voodoo Grimoire. So how are you today, Denise?
I'm doing fantastic. Very happy to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, we're happy you're here too. So our first question we ask to people who are on the show for the first time, usually something along the lines of what brought you to the plant path or what brought you to the healing path? So what brought you to the path?
Well, I would have to say it was definitely influenced from my mother and grandmother. They were both avid gardeners. And so, you know, we always had a garden when I was young and growing things and then eating, you know, what we grew was always a magical thing to me. You know, how you could put a seed in soil and watch it grow and into this fruit or vegetable, and you know, we were able to eat it, and it was just, to me, it was just really, it's always been a very sacred kind of magical thing to do that. And so, of course, as I grew up and had my own places and stuff, I, you know, had my own gardens, and I've been a very good gardener until I moved to Arizona and tried to grow a garden in the high deserts with these high winds. And it's been quite humbling because it's been 4 years now since I've been on our homestead, and I'm still struggling with getting a garden going. But it's a learning process, and I'm learning, and every year is getting a little bit better. And you know, one of these days I'll have another. I'm going to have to get a greenhouse, I think, to make that work actually around here, because the soil is so, well, it's not soil, it's sand and rocks. So. And it has a lot of minerals in it, you know, a lot of salt content, high salt and magnesium content. And it's not conducive to growing anything other than the desert plants you see growing.
Have you met any like new plants since moving out there that you're like, you know, really close to now?
Yeah, well, my most recent one that I'm getting to know is saltbush. And I had no idea about these bushes. They get to be pretty big. We have them all over our land. And so I thought, you know, I need to look this up and see what this salt bush is about. It doesn't look anything, it's nothing spectacular looking or anything, but they're just everywhere. So I wanted to know what these plants were. And so I, you know, looked it up and asked around, and come to find out it's like nature's Gatorade. So yeah, it's really high in electrolytes, the same things that you find in Gatorade, potassium, magnesium, sodium, and you can eat, you know, the leaves if, you know, they don't taste the best, but it is something you can eat if you're suffering like from heat exhaustion or something, and it will help, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And let's see, also the little seed they grow, the seeds are like in these little, they look like little paper packets, almost round paper packets.
Okay.
Those are edible, which I didn't know, but native peoples around here would, you know, used to eat them. I don't know if they still do. I have family in the Navajo reservation, and I've never seen anybody eat them, but who knows, could be some elders, you know, that still do. But yeah, so that was a great discovery, you know, about the salt bush. So it's no longer just a kind of a common little bush, you know, it's like this medicinal bush. That's really cool.
That's great to know.
Made a new friend.
Yeah.
And then we also, which I've always used, I've liked devil claws.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And they grow all around here, which is very cool. The cows don't like them very much because they get caught on their hooves and stuff, but they're also, the cows are part of how, you know, the seeds spread and the plants spread. So, but getting to know that plant, seeing the different stages of how it grows, it's really cool because, you know, it starts off as a green plant and it kind of grows tall, not real tall, but maybe 6 inches, maybe a little bit more, depends. And it's got these nice, you know, leaves with, you know, several, it's
leaflet.
A shaped leaf. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it has a nice purple flower to it. And then it gets into like this little pod, this green pod. And then as it dries into this, you know, dried pod that kind of splits open with the seeds on the inside, and you can get the seeds and everything. But that's another really cool plant. That's a good plant for protection.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So
kind of thorny.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can make stuff out of them. People make little, you know, fetishes out of them.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, I've seen people paint them and, you know, hang like rocks on it with them and make mm-hmm. little protective talismans to be hung around the home.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's always amazing when like you have an interaction with a certain plant in just like its dried form, mm-hmm. or like you use it, you buy it online or something, and then you meet it in person, you know,
right. It's
a totally new experience. And you get
yes.
to know that plant on a different level.
Mm. Exactly. Exactly.
So gardening has always been part of you, loving plants. What brought you into root work in particular?
Well, it's pretty much, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, my aunt, when I was about 5 or 6 years old, introduced me to the spiritual path about that, you know, about that time on the bayou in Mississippi, where my family is in Mississippi. And she taught me about communicating with spirits and things like that. So she kind of put a spiritual spin on things for me. But I always had that affinity with nature. And I was really grateful. You know, I had, you know, two parents who were really encouraging of us, you know, myself, my brothers, you know, to spend a lot of time outside and get to know, you know, the earth processes. And my father was like a amateur rock hound. So
cool.
He, you know, taught us a lot about that. And they always encourage us to have animals and things like that. So I think it was just a natural progression to learn. You know, my mother would always tell me, you know, what, you know, how to use things, the plants. And, you know, when you're young, you absorb things, but then as you get kind of older and things happen in your life,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of that stuff can kind of be put to the wayside or kind of suppressed or not as much of a priority. I think we did a lot of traveling. You know, I had some things happen in my childhood that weren't the best things to happen. And so that kind of interfered with, I think, with my natural progression, but it didn't stop it because I obviously have picked it up and continued
yeah.
along. But, and then as I got older, I got more in touch with my Native American roots and started studying with some elders and the medicine people to really put it more into context, you know, how to relate to plants, how to harvest them correctly, you know, according to ritual protocol, and, you know, how they were used, how could, you know, what could be eaten, what could be used as medicine, and, you know, those kinds of things. And I think one of the plants that really surprised me, that I really kind of amplified in my life, was a dandelion, the common dandelion, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I got pregnant with my son, I gained a lot of weight, like a lot of women do.
Mm-hmm.
And about 50 pounds. So that wasn't a happy thing, but of course having him was very happy.
Yeah.
was a very joyous event. And, you know, I had this weight. And so one of the grandmothers on the res, she made me this tea from dandelion root. She brought mm-hmm. me 2 gallons of this tea, and it's so bitter. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever eaten dandelion, you know, bitter dandelion,
yeah.
but it's bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, drink this every day, just drink it all.
Yeah.
And the weight will come off. And it literally in 2 weeks,
wow,
I lost like 30 pounds from drinking this tea that grandma mm-hmm. made from dandelions. And it was the roots, the dandelion root.
Cool.
And then I started to come to love those kinds of plants because to me, like a dandelion is a triple threat plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because
sure.
it's medicinal, it's magical, mm-hmm. and it's edible.
Yeah.
And I love these plants, right? Because, you know, everybody's hates on dandelions so much, and I don't know why, but people in the city do, obviously,
yeah.
who want to have their perfect lawns. Mm-hmm. But the dandelion is just such a gift from Mother Earth.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
because she offers so much. I mean, you can eat it, and I always, you know, we eat them in our salads to this day. You know, the young dandelion shoots, and you know, the roots themselves you can harvest as a for wishing potions, you know, because that's really what they're good for in hoodoo and conjure. And yeah, and medicinally, I mean, I experience exactly what how it can be used as a diuretic to get rid of weight, really, for water weight gain,
Boosting
obviously.
along.
Yeah, moving that along. So
Great spring
yeah.
tonic.
Right.
Yeah, this is the time of the year to start really taking all those diuretics all, and that's what the earth provides at this time too. You know, all those spring greens, the diuretics and tonics.
That's right. That's right. And right now, actually, I'm drinking a tea because I've been kind of under the weather the past couple of days. My stomach's kind of messed up. And so I've been drinking elderberry and ginger root. And
Ooh.
that's really helpful for stress, you know, immune response, and settling your stomach, because of the ginger is really good for that, and getting your blood going. And so, yeah.
We've been tapping some of our maple trees and boiling down the maple water and putting
Nice.
reishi mushroom in it. And sometimes I'll throw in some like dandelion root and elecampane root and
Yeah,
other
cinnamon.
things, and cinnamon. So that's like our winter
We're
daily
early
go-to
spring,
tea.
like late winter, early spring, yeah, go-to tea. I'm drinking it right now. Love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot lemon balm too is in
Oh
there.
yeah, love
Yeah.
lemon balm. So yeah, the Marie Laveau Voodoo Grimoire. So you've just this is your newest book.
Yes, it is.
It's a great book. There's a lot of
Thank
recipes
you.
and a lot of context. So why this book? Why this book now? What was your intention with writing this book?
Well, I think there's so much misunderstanding about voodoo
Yeah, okay.
in American culture. Nobody really knows what it is unless you're involved in it, you know, or you have a friend who's involved with in it, and you've had some conversations, and you can see how they live their lives. So I kind of wanted to write a book that reflected how voodoo is can be incorporated into your everyday life in ways that a lot of people wouldn't expect, like food, you know, like maintaining a household, and then of course, you know, remedies, roots and remedies, and all the things obviously that are in the book. But I wanted it to be practical. I wanted it to be a book that people could easily reproduce, you know, the recipes and the workings if they wanted to. In some of my previous books, my book, the Voodoo Hoodoo Spell Book, I've got like a ton of formulas and recipes in that book. But one of the criticisms I received from that book was that a lot of the ingredients were either too hard to find, or, you know, obscure, or there were too many ingredients for the formulas. And that's true. I've studied perfumery, so some of my formulas will be more nuanced in that way. There's more ingredients. But this book, I decided I wanted to make it simple, you know, three, maybe four ingredients per working, that were ingredients that were easy to find, kind of things you could find in your kitchen cabinet, because that's a lot of what voodoo is. It's just common, easily accessible ingredients that can be, you know, used to create a remedy or a working or whatever at a moment's notice. So really, our kitchen cabinets double for, you know, a magical cabinet too, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But so yeah, so it was an effort to make something easier to replicate, but also hopefully people can, if I get readers who are outside of my demographic, which I don't know how many of those I would get, but if I do, hopefully they could relate to, you know, like creating joy, you know, having a magical household, you know, creating harmony amongst family members, you know, practical things that are issues for everybody, no matter what your religious or spiritual path. And the thing about New Orleans voodoo and hoodoo is that they are solution-focused systems. This the system that's in place with the herbs and the roots are there to help solve problems, you know, practical problems, health issues, mental health issues, you know, relationship issues, money, anything, you know. It's just such a practical system. So I'm hoping that it comes over, you know, comes across that way.
Yeah, definitely. And can you tell us a little bit about the difference between hoodoo and voodoo?
Sure. Well, the most, I guess the easiest way to explain it is that voodoo obviously is a religion. Although New Orleans voodoo, there's two schools of thought about it. Some people refer to it as just a spiritual tradition and not necessarily a religion. Others consider it a religion. Either way, it's based out of Africa. The roots are African. And then it, as a result of the transatlantic slave trade, they, brought these beliefs, but not just, they didn't just bring the one religion, they brought several, because there's obviously more than one religion in Africa and West Africa, where most of the enslaved people were taken and brought to Louisiana. So there's a there because of the close proximity that they had to each other and the living conditions, a lot of those religions, beliefs and practices mixed and kind of combined. And out of that emerged Louisiana voodoo. But it is, from a religious standpoint, it is a hierarchical tradition based on one creator who is called a Vodun in Africa, West Africa. And then for us, we call it Bon Dieu, which is good God. So like one creator God, but below the creator is the Loas, who are the spirits of voodoo that act as intermediaries between God and humans. Because the belief is that Bon Dieu is too busy. He's too distant from humanity. He doesn't really want to mess with everyday trivial things that we go through. So the Loas are there to help us. And so they, each Loa will have a domain or area of life that they have, that they tend to. Some will be more, into technology, protection or love or whatever it might be. And we make our petitions to these spirits, and then they take our petition to God and plead our case for it. So it's much like Catholicism in the saints, where you pray to a saint, the saint, takes your prayer to God, and then, if your petition is deemed worthwhile, your prayer is answered. And then, so there's also saints in New Orleans voodoo, because my book is based on Lavaux voodoo. So it's the kind of voodoo that Marie Laveau practiced, because there's different kinds of voodoo. So the basic thing is that there's the creator, and then below the creator is the saints and the Loas. We also have angels, so and archangels, and then there's the ancestors. So there's like three different tiers of spirits, so to speak, but there's a lot of spirits in that structure. And so like Lavaux voodoo is a form of voodoo. It's the form of voodoo that Marie Laveau practiced, but she was also a devout Catholic. So she incorporated a lot of the Catholicism, the saints, obviously, burning of candles, different things that we do in Catholicism too. And she made it into a workable system. And so she was able to create this workable system that we still practice today. Now, she also worked with roots and plants. And so she was also what we call a root worker now. And a lot of her workings are exactly what we see in what is called hoodoo now. So back in her day, she practiced what we would call two different things, hoodoo and voodoo. But for her, it wasn't separate. It was all one. She wasn't, saying, "I'm doing hoodoo today." I mean, most practitioners who grew up in the system, we don't say, I'm doing this hoodoo. It's just part of life. It's like part of your arsenal of tools that you use to deal with life situations and that kind of thing. And she was no different in that way. And in fact, in the first book I wrote about her, The Magic of Marie Laveau, I identified 12 different categories of magic that she practiced that is still practiced today. So it provides like a continuity of tradition that you can see. But today, there's been the separation of the two. There's hoodoo, which is not a religious system. hoodoo is just a magical system. It's a system of resistance. It's a system of survival. It's a practical system, and it's not necessarily associated with voodoo, the voodoo spirits, unless the person is a practitioner of voodoo too. Then there may be some bleed over. A lot of people who practice hoodoo will work with saints or some of the folk saints and whatever their spirits are. They might work within hoodoo within the system, their own religious system. Like, you know, you can be any religion, Protestant, you know, and practice hoodoo. Mm-hmm. But so there's a separation of the two now. In New Orleans voodoo, originally, it wasn't separate like that. Although the practices did come from different regions in Africa and emerge as a unique kind of a system here in America. But yeah, so kind of getting.
So that's a great breakdown of the difference. And there's also like Haitian voodoo as well, or is that more Voodoo?
Yeah.
And so
Haitian voodoo.
Okay.
It's more structured. They were able to retain more of the rites. The traditional rites, African rite, and of course they developed their own systems as well, because due to colonialism. But they have more spirits actually. I would say more spirits, because I think they work with more forms of the different Luas, like you know, Ogun. Mm-hmm. There's many paths of Ogun. In New Orleans voodoo, we may work with maybe one or two, three maybe. Paths of him. In Haitian voodoo, they'll have many different paths. Now, I'm not a practitioner of Haitian voodoo. I'm not an expert in that religion. I've only studied it to understand differences and kind of grow my own understanding of the different forms.
And so there was also there was a lot of mixing going on in New Orleans too. Even Haitians going to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. After the revolution. And then also the indigenous knowledge with the French and Spanish. Mm-hmm. There's like so much going on. But the voodoo in particular is more based on African roots, with some syncretism with Catholicism, but not like a massive. Well, I guess it would depend on the strain too. Like Marie Laveau is more syncretized with Catholicism, but there are other strains that are less. Is that right?
Correct. Correct. In New Orleans, in Louisiana, it's really kind of that's one of the hallmarks of what New Orleans voodoo is. But not all New Orleans voodoo practitioners do incorporate Catholicism in their practice. There are New Orleans voodooists who do not incorporate Catholicism, and there's different reasons for it. You know, there's the reaction against the colonial mindset. You know, there are people who do not like the fact that Marie Laveau made a business out of hoodoo and voodoo. And so they reject her. Most New Orleans voodooists accept her as the mother of New Orleans voodoo. Anyone who practices the form of New Orleans voodoo that includes Catholicism are commonly referred to as Catholic voodoos or Laveau voodoo, if you are a devotee of Marie Laveau. Mm-hmm. So it's really complicated. I used to think that New Orleans voodoo, when I first kind of went public with it over 20 years ago, I used to think, well, it's really not that complicated, because it's not like Haitian voodoo with all these structured rites and stuff. You got to learn all this stuff. But actually, it is in a sense, it's more complicated, because there's so many little nuanced practices and things in New Orleans voodoo that causes a lot of misunderstanding. Like when I first started talking about New Orleans voodoo on the internet, I caught a lot of flack for it. One, because I was sharing things that weren't talked about, but none of it was I wasn't sharing anything initiatory. You know, for one, New Orleans voodoo isn't an initiatory tradition. There are people who are initiated. Most of it is within family lines, but we don't have the formal type of initiation rites like Haitian voodoo does. So for the most part, it's an open tradition. Anybody can practice it. You don't have to be initiated to practice it. And I forgot where I was going with all that, but.
Well, it sounds also very individual too. So Every individual practitioner is going to have their own spin. They're going to work with their own spirits and their own plants and so on too. And like, yeah. So it varies depending on the person.
Exactly. And you know, the plant aspect of it, the botanical aspect of it, is largely indigenous, because obviously the enslaved people who came here didn't have the same plants to work with that they had in Africa, so they had to learn the plants here, and they learned those from their indigenous neighbors. So yeah, that's where a big part of the Native American influence comes from.
So going back to the Marie Laveau voodoo, maybe we should clarify and just like say like who is Marie Laveau for those who don't know.
Right. Well, Marie Laveau was a free woman of color. She was born in 1801 in New Orleans. She became obviously known worldwide as the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. But in New Orleans, she's really appreciated and acknowledged for much more than that. We love her for her charitable work. She was very much a nursemaid. She worked with people who suffered from yellow fever and the different ailments that, were prevalent in her time. In fact, the yellow fever epidemic lasted for like 6 or 7 decades. So her entire life was living in a pandemic or
Oh my
epidemic.
gosh.
So we think we had it tough, right? With COVID-19. Well, her whole life was, dealing with different things like that. But she never caught it, which is really amazing. That's one of the, miracles of Marie Laveau, is that how she worked with all these people and who were sick all the time, and she never caught it. Well, we know now that you can develop an immunity to it. And so people who were in New Orleans tended to develop an immunity to yellow fever, and it was the people who came through that were getting sick. And so she was able to help them in that way. She also worked with alongside Father Antoine, who was the head priest of the St. Louis Cathedral at the time. And he was also helping people who were sick from yellow fever and that kind of thing. But she was also an advocate for people who were in prison. She would bail out women who got busted from during ceremonies, because during her lifetime it was a common thing for the police to come and interrupt ceremonies and arrest people and haul them all in. And she was her ceremonies were treated that way. But she never really got arrested herself, but she would go down and she would advocate for the women who did. She would bail them out. She was a woman of means until her later days. Then she didn't have a whole lot of money, but when she did, she used it for good. She, fed people. She allowed a lot the Choctaw women of the marketplace. They would come and stay at her place during the week when they were selling their wares.
Nice.
She had like a little area in the back of her home that she allowed them to stay. And so she did, she had a prison ministry. She would go in and, talk to the men, especially the ones on death row. And she would create altars in their cells for them so that
Oh.
they could pray. And there's even a newspaper article about that, about her doing one time doing that. She would also make their last meals. So yeah, she had her prison ministry. She had, she was like a nurse. She did a lot of charitable work like that. And obviously she was known as the Voodoo Queen. And yeah, so she was, her ceremonies on St. John's Eve, June 23rd every year, became very popular and very famous. And even the cops would show up and, celebrate. So there was this, and a lot of times, at least over half of her congregation were white people, and especially white women. And that caused a lot of scandal, especially like when they'd go bust these, rituals that they were having, and then a lot of the women were white women. Yeah. But,
Sounds like so. Yeah, like.
in public, people wouldn't want to admit it, but on the down low, they were going to her and getting, her advice for their relationships and money and bailing people out of jail, getting them out of their, court cases and things like that. So
Yeah, I also noticed in your book that you make offerings to her, or you can make offerings to her on either her birthday, September 18th, or on the day she died, which is right before St. John's Day, the Feast of St. John's. And you make offerings of mirrors and brushes, perfume, French pastries, and you light a blue candle. So why the mirrors and brushes? Like, can you give us a
Oh.
little bit of insight about like why those offerings for her?
Yes, that was because she was a beautician.
Okay, cool.
So earlier in her career, she only did that for a period of time. She wasn't a beautician in her entire life, but when earlier in life, she was a beautician, and she would go into the homes of people who with means, and she would do their hair. Mostly it was the white women. She would go in and do their hair. And that's where she learned about a lot of the gossip, what was going on between people, right? And she stored that away. And she realized, well, she could use this information to help her in her business. And she did. And, there were times when she would have the wife come to her, for a problem in the marriage, and also the husband, but unbeknownst to each other, and she would be able to help both of them, but she had this inside knowledge because you know how women are when you go into a, get your hair done, it's just a common
Can't
thing
stop
to just start
talking.
talking, right? You just talk about stuff and you gossip,
100%.
right? And so she had a little, she had that going, and she actually developed like a network of informants because she was smart. She was very smart. And that's another thing we love about her is because she was an entrepreneur, during a time when Black women, Creole women, who had more opportunity, but she excelled in a society where, African people of African descent were, oppressed, actively oppressed. She gallivanted around the town like she owned the place, and she did. She, you know, she, you know, had connections in the courts. She had connections with the church, so she could get away with a lot of things that other people couldn't. But she developed like a network of informants because she knew that she couldn't be anybody, she couldn't blackmail people herself. That wouldn't be good for her business. But she could have other people, who were also beauticians or whatever, could also, gather information, and they would bring her this information. And so she was very well informed about the goings-ons of relationships in high society. And she was able to, earn a good living in that way too.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, what an interesting person.
Definitely.
Sure, definitely somebody.
A lot of people call, have a tendency to call her like a con woman because of what she did like that. But I refer to it as cunning. She wasn't conning, she was cunning. She was smart. She knew what she was doing. And she was helping people. So
Yeah,
very cool.
definitely. I mean, if you're using the power that you cultivate in life for good, for healing, and for helping people, then that's you're creating great karma.
Exactly.
You're helping.
Exactly.
That's really cool, and definitely sounds like a person, a spirit to have on your side, a mighty dead to have on your side, especially if you're working in this kind of a system.
Right. And so that's why we offer her combs, mirrors, things of a
Perfume.
beautician, perfumes, right? Anything like that is appropriate to
Cool.
offer her.
So does your background in perfumery, does that like do you feel a closer vibe with her about that with that too?
Yeah,
Because
I think to me it's like alchemy, That's how I view creating, potions and things from plants and essences like that, because it really is. You're taking one form and you're creating something totally, not totally different, but yeah, you're creating something different, out of a basic root or whatever. And
Yeah, and you've got some great recipes in here too. I really like a lot of the oils and waters. Maybe we could get into that a little bit. Like
okay.
if somebody's getting into this for the first time, say they're an herbalist and they haven't done very much magical stuff before, what would you start them on making an oil or a water? What kind of what would be like the most basic and most useful water or oil?
Well, the most versatile one I would start them off with would be Louisiana Vanvan. Okay, because it's got so many properties. You can use it to open roads. You can use it for good luck. You can use it to draw good fortune for money. It's, can be used for blessing. It can be used for cleansing. I mean, it really is an all-purpose kind of formula. So I always, that's one formula that I do teach my students as in all my classes. That's one that you just, it's a staple. You got to have that. And it's made out of vervain and or lemon verbena and different basically that's it, with vanilla and so it's a really kind of an easy formula to make. I've got some lemon verbena growing in my bedroom right now, actually.
Awesome.
Yeah, so in the book you've got lemon verbena and then some oil of rosemary, lemongrass, and cinnamon.
Yes.
So that's like
that particular formula comes from, well, it's a blending of formula, but it comes from the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum.
Okay.
The New Orleans Pharmacy was one of the, you know, pharmacies back in the, like the 30s and right around then. There were, and earlier, there were pharmacies that began to be like hoodoo drugstores, what we call hoodoo drugstores. The pharmacists began to learn some of the formulas. Many times they made up their own, but a lot of times for people who are practitioners, but they weren't what we call swampers. Swampers are the ones who actually go out into the swamps and create and collect the plants and the roots. And they're a rare breed even now. Even though there's been kind of a resurgence in hoodoo and root work, most people buy their plants rather than growing their own or going out and foraging for their own. But the swampers would go and they would sell them, you know, the roots and stuff to the pharmacists, and then they could compound the formulas and sell them to their ever-growing Black clientele. And the New Orleans Voodoo, the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum has a this little notebook, this tattered little notebook that has some of the formulas that they used. And it's really, I included that one in the book because it's one of the, it's the earliest that I could find documented of the formula that was consistent with what we see and use today for Vanvan. But the addition of rosemary and cinnamon, it is a departure from what the popular commercial formulation is.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's why I included it, because I try to go back. I try to present, you know, the authentic original as far, as much as possible formulas.
Cool.
Yeah. So a lot of these formulas, like where did you get most of these formulas? Was it from places like that? Or old books, or where are the sources for these recipes?
Yeah, well, a lot of it's from, you know, the commercial sector, but the actual formulas I've found come from, a lot of them come from these interviews that were conducted by the government during the Great Depression. They started a program, the Federal Writers Project, that was started to by Roosevelt to, I think it was Roosevelt, right? I don't know, anyway, to employ out of work writers. So this was a project. They're like, okay, out of work writers, you want a job? Go interview, you know, elderly Black folks about their culture. And so they did. And they wrote a lot of this stuff down, but most of it that was written down, actually, well, not most of, I don't know if it's most of it, and I can't tell you that or not, but there's a lot of it that is not, has not been published. And it's available. The original notes and everything are available through the library, Louisiana State Library, but they're very expensive to procure. I've spent a lot of money on those documents because I wanted to see them. I wanted to see, you know, I wanted to learn. I want to see what these people had to say, right?
Right.
And there's so many little gems in there.
Yeah.
From these just ordinary everyday people who were practitioners or knew, you know, or their parents were practitioners, or their cousin was, or their sister was, or whatever. And they, you know, they shared a lot of their, you know, their knowledge there. And so I've obviously taken notes on those, but also it's, some of the formulas come from just my own grimoires, my own formulations, just understanding the magical properties of plants and how the combinations can amplify an effect. So So yeah, it's great. I chose that source. I focus a lot on that source because it's the closest to Marie Laveau that we can get. Now, she was illiterate. She didn't write things down. And some people criticize that source because they say, well, they were too old. They wouldn't have known Marie Laveau. But I don't, that's not true. Anybody who was over the age of 60 could have known her. They would have been children. But, you know, some of them were children and they recall their experiences going to Marie Laveau's house. You know, like this one person, she said that Marie Laveau used to send her to the store to go get bergamot for her. That was one of her favorite things, was bergamot and incense powders. So, I mean, that was cool. It's like, oh, bergamot, cool. So, you know, I've been kind of amplify that. Well, what is it about bergamot that makes it so great? You know, in fact, I'm writing a blog article about that right now.
Nice.
You know, you find different things like that. And so these people really are the closest thing to her that we have for actual authentic recipes and formulas.
And even if they were kids at the time when she was alive, like their parents, they're probably learning from their parents who might have been working with her, you know. So
exactly.
Wow, what a treasure trove of, you know, knowledge. That's so cool.
Yeah. And there's a lot of pages left to go through. There's like thousands of pages of these notes.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lifetime project going through everything.
For sure. But then you get to learn a lot of secrets.
Yeah.
Exactly. So cool.
Yeah. You also say at the end here somewhere about how you shouldn't give away all your secrets.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, and that's something Marie Laveau said. So, you know, she was right about that. You don't want to give away everything.
Sure.
It's just, you know, there is stuff that is initiatory knowledge that you don't give away, some family secrets, you know. But I try to share as much as possible, simply just because there's so much misinformation out there about her and about, you know, a lot of different things. I mean, there's a common practice that I hear from a lot of people who come from the witchcraft vein about, you know, substituting graveyard dirt with mullein. And it's like, no, no, don't do that. You know, they're like, not the same things.
Graveyard dirt's not that hard to get. You know, there's graveyards everywhere.
Right. And then also, you know, there's lots of different kinds of graveyard dirt, you know, the grave gathered from a baby's grave.
Yeah.
Is very different than the dirt gathered from, you know, a lawyer's grave.
Sure.
So we gather dirts from different graves for different purposes.
Right.
So you got to know the difference and also where on the grave you would gather, you know, like from the foot, head, you know, middle, right hand, left hand. Yeah. And, you know, the time that it would be gathered. And then there's a difference between graveyard dirt and grave dirt.
Okay.
So as you can see, just from that very brief cursory description I've given, how can mullein equate to any of that? Mullein is a fantastic herb.
Yeah.
You know? I've got a bag of it in my hallway right now.
Nice.
That grows, you know, plentifully around here too.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a great herb. It's got its own characteristics and its own things that it doesn't, you know, it's not an adequate substitute. It's not an appropriate substitute for grave dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes
sense.
And
so for people who are new into, you know, like gathering grave dirt, I tell them, you know, you want to gather graveyard dirt. So somewhere and from a general area of the graveyard, not from actually a grave, because when you gather dirt from a grave, you're actually making a contract with a spirit. You know, to do that, you don't just go take the dirt. You've got to ask permission. You've got to give offerings. And if they give you permission, then you can gather it. But you just don't grab dirt and take it from somebody's grave. That's
imagine how that might go wrong.
Right. Right. Like murder. People will go get dirt from murderer and think it's a great thing. And that's, you know, that can be good for death conjure or whatever. But you don't want to keep that in your house.
Yeah.
For example, you know, that's the kind of dirt that you don't keep in your house. You keep it outside. So there's a science. And I have a course that I offer, a graveyard science, because of all the different things that are part of working with grave dirt.
Yeah, and there's all this framework for understanding how all of these things work. And once you know that really well, then you can improvise, you know, and make recipes and so on. But if you don't understand the foundational framework, then you can make some really bad mistakes.
Exactly. And that's, you know, such a good point. You really do have to have a good foundation in the plants in order to be a good practitioner of hoodoo, you know, or root work. You have to know what your plants are. Yeah. And, you know, learning about the doctrine of signatures, you know, to help understand, you know, their purpose and things like that. Once you know that, then you can create any formula you want. You don't have to follow a recipe book. You know, you don't have to follow a grimoire. You can make your own. And there have been people who actually criticized me about that. You know, you're just making up stuff. Yeah. Because I have the knowledge and I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know how these things work. And all formulas come from somebody who has knowledge about these plants and how they work and how to energize them. So anybody, you know, worth their weight in lodestones knows how to, you know, they understand their plants that they work with, and they can create their own formulas. That's the whole goal. The goal is to be self, you know,
be adaptable and
right.
To because every situation is different. You might have different ingredients, you know, so you need to learn how to improvise and to adapt. But also it's a lot like being a good cook or being a good chef, you know.
Exactly.
Know your ingredients, and you know what tastes good and what effect you're going for, then, you know, you can make up recipes.
Exactly.
And then
that's another chapter I have in my book about, you know, a magical kitchen, kitchen witchery, making food is a ritual.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a magical act, you know. What's that?
Alchemy again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm very mindful of how I'm feeling. You know, if I'm in a bad mood, it's not a good idea to cook for my family.
Yeah.
I got to get in the right mental space, and I'm very practiced at it. So I don't bring my, you know, negative energy to my cooking, because to me, it's a sacred act.
Yeah.
When I'm creating a meal for my family, I want them to eat something delicious. Mm-hmm. I want them to feel good while we're eating it, you know. I want to, you know, create conversation and, you know, be a connecting kind of energy. And the different ingredients that we use, there's the spices, you know, it's like, you know, I'm adding basils, I'm adding a little bit of prosperity in there, right? You know, if I'm adding cinnamon, I'm adding, you know, a little bit of love and, you know, spicing things up in life, you know, whatever it might be, rosemary, you know, I'm adding, you know, some female energy, you know, grounding energy in there. Not to mention all the medicinal aspects of herbs too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
When we were talking about the graveyard dirt and like connecting with spirits, it made me just wonder about ways of protecting yourself and how you might cleanse and protect in your tradition.
Cleansing and protection. Yeah. Two different things that go hand in hand. I think really with almost any working in voodoo, there's a cleansing that should precede a lot of the workings. And that's just to get rid of anything that might be part of you that needs to just like go away so that something new can manifest, you know, but also your surroundings. The clutter is very much a stopper of manifestation and of magic, you know? So I always encourage people to take a look at your surroundings, clean up, you know, you don't have to be, you know, anal about it. But if you got a bunch of boxes and stuff blocking your doorway physically, and then your life is kind of like hitting roadblocks.
Yeah.
simply cleaning that area can create an energetic shift so that things can start to manifest in your favor. So physically cleaning, you know, your space, taking spiritual baths, which are designed for cleansing and can be healing as well. And spiritual baths you can take for pretty much anything now. Protection. So You've got to do that, and then you put your protections in place. So there's simple things that we can do. I like working with railroad spikes. So you take four railroad spikes, and you can attach a buffalo nickel on the top of each spike, and then you put it in the four corners of your yard, and it creates a protective barrier. So you would nail them into the ground. We use red brick dust around the doorways, any kind of doorway, you just spread a little bit of red brick dust, and that's to keep out evil and negativity. Bottle trees are something else. That's it's a Congo tradition. Actually, it comes from the Congo. And my mother and my grandmother used to have bottle trees, so I've always had bottle trees. And the bottle trees are great because they stop negative spirits too, because the spirits get enchanted by the colors that the sun, when the sun hits the bottles or whatever, they get enchanted by it, and so they go into the bottle and they can't get out, so they're stuck in there. So bottle trees are great. I know not everybody can have one, but you can make one actually and put it into a pot. You can just get a branch from a tree and stick it in a pot and put bottles on it. Ooh. And then you have a bottle tree in your home. You can place it anywhere. You can put it on your porch, or you could put it, you know, somewhere else in the yard. Yeah. That, and then, you know, anointing doorways with a fiery wall of protection is a popular formula that it taps into Saint Michael and his flaming sword to protect us from evil, and using some of that oil, fiery wall protection oil, or any kind of holy oil, you can use to anoint the windows and doorways of your home to keep evil and negativity out. That's a simple thing that you can do for protection. And then you can also wear it. Right? So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, so this has been a great talk. Really appreciate you having you on the show. Can you tell our listeners where to get your book, where to take your classes, where to find out more about you?
Sure. My book is available at any major bookstore, even little bookstores. It's published by Wiser. And I have it on my website. All my books are on my website, creolemoon.com. That's where I sell magical wares also, candles and oils and incense, things like that. And then I teach my classes at crossroadsuniversity.com. I offer like 20, I think there's like 21 classes listed right now that people can take about all aspects of Southern root work, New Orleans voodoo, protection, all kinds of, you know, cool occult and folk magic topics people can find there and learn about.
So nice. You have like one-off classes available, or do you have like a program that people do?
You can sign up. There's open enrollment, and people can take a class anytime, work at their own pace.
Nice.
And I do offer a free course on New Orleans voodoo. Ooh. The only place you can find that, but I did that because of my dedication to, you know, disseminating accurate information for people who want to learn. So you can go sign up and take that course. No strings attached. The form there is free. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And is there anything that you have coming up that you're excited about that you want to tell us about? I am excited about your blog post.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing actually this coming weekend, I'm going to be doing a book party with Yaya Louisa Teesh, which is, she's like just an OG of all this. You know, she's amazing. And one of my first books that I really read so much, the pages started coming out, falling out of, was her book, Jambalaya. That I recommend anybody who's interested in learning about Louisiana voodoo, whatever. She was born in New Orleans also, and she's a generation before me. So she has a lot of wisdom to pass on to people, and a reliable, good source. And so it's kind of like a culmination of a lifetime to end up doing a, you know, a book party with her.
Yay, so, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's this Sunday.
And where is that going to be?
It's both online and in California.
Awesome.
So details are on my, I put all the details on my social media and stuff. So.
Okay, cool. Instagram, yeah. And you're on Instagram.
Yeah.
On Real Moon.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, this has been great. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, us too. It was fantastic. Thanks, Denise. Enjoy
Thank
your
you. Bye-bye.